Welcome to Lovers Forever. So, it's been a while since I've last uploaded. I wanted to say thank you to everyone who has listened to the podcast so far. I never imagined that anyone besides my friends and family would listen. When I see that there are people listening in places like the UK, or Hamburg, Germany, or Australia, I simply can't believe it. This week, I'm bringing you a special episode. I was privileged to interview Laura Stocker and Linnell Siebold from the Ava Gardner Museum in Smithfield, North Carolina. Linnell is the museum's director, and Laura does social media strategy, graphic design, and is on the museum's board as well. As the first season of this podcast makes clear, I'm a passionate Ava fan, and I was so honored to speak to both of these ladies. We talked about Ava's life and legacy, as well as her extensive career in film, and the work that the museum does to educate the public about all these things. And we talked about the Ava Gardner Festival in honor of her centennial, which is going on at the museum this year from October 7th through the 9th. Due to some frankly tragic technical problems, my audio clips with Linnell have been lost. But I hope you will enjoy the interview I did with Laura, and I'll be inserting some of Linnell's responses throughout. Hi, Laura. It's such a privilege to be speaking with you today. Would you mind introducing yourself and telling everyone more about what you do at the museum?
My name's Laura Stocker, and I'm a board member of the museum. I joined the board in the fall of 2019. Before that, I got involved with the museum earlier that year on a volunteer capacity. I'm a graphic designer, artist, and illustrator with my own business based in North Carolina. And I love classic Hollywood, love classic film, always have. Can't remember a time when I didn't. And the museum is basically in my backyard, about 10 minutes from my house. So I've always been a fan of it and a supporter of it, but had not gotten involved. And in early 2019, I met Linnell one time on a visit to the museum, and we just instantly clicked. And Linnell Siebold is the director of the museum. And I asked if there was any opportunity or any need for a volunteer in this realm of doing social media, which is part of the area where I specialize in my career. And she said, yes, that would be great. And so we started working on a few things, and they were gearing up for their festival, which was taking place in the spring at that time. And I did some contributions with that, with some social media campaigns and things to kind of help promote what they were focusing on that year with the festival, and just got along really well with the team, and loved participating in that space and helping the museum, and continued to do that through the rest of the summer. And then at the end of the summer, Linnell asked if I would be interested in joining, and have been an active board member ever since. The board is a working board, so we all contribute in a lot of ways and do different things. And my background in design and working in social media and all of that, that's a big area where I contribute with kind of the social media direction, oversight, or kind of strategy around the social media. And then I love talking and writing about film, so I've contributed to the blog and help edit and write and those sorts of things. So just wherever I'm needed, but kind of, you know, we all try to kind of leverage our own skill sets in ways that we can help contribute and support the board and the museum's mission.
So how did you discover Ava?
This is a great question, and I love getting asked this. I was asked this on a previous podcast I did, and I hadn't really thought about it until then, so I'm glad I get this question. I have memories of my parents loved classic film. My grandparents loved classic movies. Feel like they were always on the TV, but I have memories of my mom being in the crib and my mom singing me to sleep, and she would sing Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine, and Bill and other songs from Showboat. I don't know why those songs in particular, they're not the most obvious lullabies for a little kid, but they were sung to me nonetheless. And I had those tunes in my head. And as I got older and would catch, be at my grandmother's house and a classic movie would come on, she would say, "Oh, we need to watch this." Or she played the piano and taught me to play the piano. And she had a great collection of vintage, well, not vintage to her, but sheet music that was vintage to me. And would love to kind of dive into that. Who are these people on the cover? Is that Fred Astaire? Is that Gene Kelly? Is that Judy Garland and all of that? And then, of course, Ava Gardner on the cover of the songs from Showboat. So I just was kind of immersed in it. And Ava was kind of always in my consciousness because anytime she would come up, my parents would say, "You know, she's from North Carolina, don't you? She's just from down the road." So she was always kind of, I was aware of her from a very young age. And then as I got older and, I'm a Turner Classic Movies kid, as a lot of us are who are classic film fans. So I grew up, with the channel and was able to see her movies and learn more about these stars who I'd heard my parents or grandparents talk about, or I was playing songs, piano songs from their movies and all that. So I was very excited to seek out the work of Ava. And as I got older, I, read her autobiography and then tried to kind of devour any other book that I could find on her and started going to the museum and learning more about her life in North Carolina and her deep roots in the state. And she's just kind of always been around, and I'm happy to learn. I'm always excited to learn more about her. I find her endlessly fascinating, and she's a great museum and a great person to kind of take a deep dive in.
I discovered her probably the opposite way of most people, which is through a book, and then and then started watching her movies. But in a way, I'm kind of glad that that's how it happened for me, because the thing I fell in love with first was less like her tremendous beauty and more like her life story and her personality and all of that. And it kind of added something to watching her movies that I don't think would have been there otherwise, because I sort of knew what her life circumstances were in each one, like in The Hucksters, how nervous she was to work with Clark Gable and how he would joke around to set her at ease and this really sweet friendship that developed between them and all of that. So
those are aspects that I really love about her, reading more about her, talking to her family, people who knew her and all of that. Just those. I mean, we all have insecurities. We all have things that we're nervous about or moments where we're like, feel overwhelmed. And she's so honest about sharing those with us or was in her book. And her family said how, she was always very honest and true about, what she was feeling and how she was feeling and all of that. And I find that very, that's something I can really connect with myself from my own experiences of having moments of insecurity or whatever. And I love that that's your entry point to her. So many people do kind of either meet her through her connection with Frank Sinatra, or they meet her through an image. That's the entry point. But then when you stick around and you take the time to read more about her or watch her movies, you learn so much more and you see the talent that was there and the just the screen presence that she had and all of that. You're rewarded for that investment.
Yes, that's definitely true. So in your view, what makes Ava different or distinct from her contemporaries? We sort of just touched on that, but
yeah. Great segue. Yeah. Obviously, I find film to be a very personal thing. So I'm going to love a movie that the person sitting next to me may not. It's very much about what resonates with you and what connects with you. What I find personally in her performances that I really enjoy that sort of seems to really separate her from her contemporaries, but put her in a kind of group that is a little unique. She didn't have any acting training. She didn't have, she was thrust this career as you've talked about on your podcast. She was thrust into this life that was really beyond anything she could have imagined, and she made the most of it. But she had to learn on the job, and she learned on the job really by kind of, looking inward, I think, a lot of times, finding things in the characters where she could connect with, feeling comfortable in an environment, either with a co-star, like you mentioned with Clark Gable, or with a director that she really trusted, or a producer who believed in her. And she would take the time to find things in those characters that connected. And, you know, we talk about her a lot. The term earthy gets used a lot with her, which I think is an appropriate term. I think that is, I also think of that as sort of another side of being naturalistic. And I think her work is very, there's an authenticity to it. There's kind of a stripped down element to it. You know, she had difficulties at MGM with the studio really not knowing what to do with her lots of the time, not knowing what kind of roles would fit for her. And you look at her breakout in Whistle Stop and The Killers, and those were two films that were loan outs where she was sent to other studios and had the opportunity to just kind of be herself, you know, less makeup, less of the MGM look, you know, more stripped down, more simplified costumes, although they're iconic, but they're very simple. Her makeup's very simple. Her hair is very much how she wore it in her own life. And those sorts of things made her feel like this is a living, breathing character. And even if she was only on screen for, you know, 30 minutes or an hour, half of the movie, which was the case in several of her films, her character resonates and is a touch point throughout of a lot of those movies where she's maybe more of like a featured star, like Showboat, where we were talking about earlier, where she's only in the movie for about 30 minutes, but she's the, you know, she's one of the first things you see and she's the last thing you see. And her character is referenced, or you feel her character percolating under the surface. And I find that really fascinating that she had such a presence that she could carry that in a film. Even if she's not always on the screen, you're thinking about her. You're wondering where she is, what she's doing. And I just think she had a lot of talent that was innate, that she had to kind of find herself on screen and find her persona. And she made the most of that and really explored it in a lot of interesting films that, to me, hold up quite well with a modern lens.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think people who aren't as familiar with the old Hollywood system don't realize that actors and actresses back then had very little control, almost none at all, over what movies they appeared in. And so, you know, the fact that Ava would try to stand up for herself in those situations, that's something about her I've always admired. Certainly a lot of other actresses had to do that too. You know, Marilyn Monroe didn't want to be in The Girl with the Pink Tights and all of that. Started off her own production company. But yeah, that's something that I think for Ava being a movie star was perhaps further down on the priority list, which is kind of a refreshing thing in a way that feels like pretty unusual in that industry.
Yeah, and I think Ava's somebody who, you know, you can see it in her roles and she had a great zest for life. That's a term we've sort of started using some in the language that we're writing for the museum and on our website and all of that. But it's very true that she, you know, the career and, you know, it was her beauty that led her to these opportunities. And then she was like, you know, I'm here. I'm going to make the most of this. I'm going to, you know, travel. I'm going to embrace the culture that I'm around. I'm going to try to give back. I'm going to try to make an impact. She really did a lot to kind of, you know, find her, you know, she found herself along the way. She found, you know, a great love of learning, a great love of reading, a great love of, you know, she always loved music, but getting to meet musicians and becoming friends with Duke Ellington and other people, you know, and becoming friends with writers and poets and artists and, you know, traveling abroad and ultimately moving abroad, which was very daring at the time when she did it at the height of her career, really, you know, making those choices and saying, you know, this is the right decision for me now. And I'm going to make that decision. It may not be popular. It may not be what the studio wants. It may not be what anybody expects me to do, but it's right for me. And I'm going to do it because I can feel I can be myself here, or I can explore this culture, this food, this music, this, you know, people that are different from me and that are going to open my eyes to new things. And, you know, she just had this zest and willingness to embrace the opportunity and the things that were kind of put out in front of her to pick from, you know, and I find that really commendable. And she did that, you know, in spite of, you know, she followed her heart. She found, you know, love along the way that was passionate and intense. And then when that didn't work out, she said, okay, I'm going to move on and I'm going to go and, you know, make myself happy and live somewhere else or do something else and try something else. And then when the studio system, you know, when her contract ended, she was more selective in the films she picked. She was more controlling in the way that she got paid and more mindful of that. And she wanted to work with directors that were more, you know, challenging to her and all of that. And I just find all of that really interesting and commendable. And not that there weren't other stars doing it, but she was certainly in that small group of people who made those bold moves. And I think that makes her really relevant today. Look at as to some degree a role model. You know, she's not iconic for nothing. You know, she was really, you know, pushing the envelope. And I find that really fascinating. And I enjoy learning more about her and those choices and those decisions and all of that as I, you know, learn more about her life through the work at the museum.
One of the questions I asked Linnell was, what's a misconception about Ava that you often hear? And she told me that they often have to correct the story that Ava relied on Frank Sinatra to support her financially in her final years. This simply isn't true. And that's because, in part, Ava didn't expect to die as relatively young as she did. She thought she had a lot of life left, and she had planned her finances accordingly. Linnell also told me that while one of Ava's famous quotes about her movie career is, "I did it for the loot," she wasn't implying that she was broke. She was simply being realistic about what it took to finance the lifestyle to which she'd become accustomed. In the years since Ava's death in 1990, the Ava Gardner Trust has continued to support the museum as well as philanthropic work for places like the Queen Victoria Hospital in London. Ava didn't rely on Frank in her final years, although it is true that he did pay for some of her medical and traveling expenses.
What is your favorite performance of Ava's?
Well, this changes, you know, it's whatever I saw last. No, not totally that. But when I started getting involved with the museum about a year after my joining the board, I helped work on a new exhibit around Pandora and the Flying Dutchman, coincided with the new release from Cohen Media of the film. And we're going to be screening it at the film festival. So I'm very excited about that. We can share more about that in a minute. But that was a movie that I had seen probably in high school for the first time. I think I called it on Turner Classic Movies one time and really liked it, but didn't totally get everything that it had in it. And so working on this exhibit with the director of the museum, the curator, and one of the other board members, really did a deep dive in it. I watched, you know, got the new Blu-ray, watched it many, many, many times, and read, you know, everything I could about the production, not just from Ava's perspective, but from the director, the cinematographer, all of that, and just really fell in love with this quirky movie that's not for everyone. I mean, it's totally fantastical is the right word. It's very much a film with an artistic eye. So if you're a fan of art history, and I took tons of art history classes in my educational life, and you know, was an art major in addition to my design work and all. And it's a film that if you're in that space and love art and love art history, you're going to really get into this movie because it's very intentional. So much of it, you know, from the costuming to the set design, all of that, it's very purposeful in how the shots are constructed, the way it's filmed, the setting and all of that. And Ava is just really fantastic in this movie. And I like the character. She's not necessarily on the surface the most likable character, but she's very honest. You know, she has these, for those who haven't seen it, she has these men who are sort of hangers on, they're pursuing her, and she's totally disinterested with them. And she tells them that. And she's totally like, look, you're into me far more than I'm into you. Please just step away. you're not going to be happy with me. I can tell you. And I love that, like, the honesty of that, but yet they pursue her and they want to possess her. And she doesn't want to be possessed. She wants to be in a relationship where she feels that she is with her match, that she's with somebody who can see her for who she is, and that she can see them equally, that there's this equitability to the relationship. And while, you know, and then this dashing, mysterious person sweeps in, and I won't give too much away, but sweeps in and takes her breath away, and she takes his breath away. So it's just this really interesting movie that's got all of these layers and components. And when we were working on the exhibit, I would text the curator who I was working with quite a bit on developing some of the copy for everything, and say, did you see this? Did you notice this? Did you, you know, and all this. We had so much fun kind of pulling back the layers of that movie and learning more about it. And I think it's amazing to think that was the first time she was filmed in Technicolor. 51 was kind of a banner year for her. It was really kind of the 50s in general were really big for Ava, but 51 had Showboat and that. And it was released first in Europe, and then Showboat was released first in the States. They held back. MGM had the release rights and screening rights to Pandora, and they waited to screen it here as the second release of the year for her, or third actually, but she American audiences saw her in Technicolor first in Showboat, and then got to see her in Pandora, and it was the reverse in Europe. But just to think that it took 10 years to get her in the lead role in a Technicolor film is wild to me. And she just pops off the screen, not that we want to focus so much on her beauty, because that's, she's so much more than that. But she takes your breath away in this movie. So that's another kind of component. I don't know that she was ever filmed more beautifully than she was in this movie, but I highly recommend folks checking it out if they're fans of her films, even if it's a quirky film and you might want to watch it more than once. It's a great one. What about you? What's your favorite?
Well, like you, it changes from time to time. I've always been fond of Mogambo because she's just so funny in that movie. And, I think it's interesting because, like, at the time, her marriage to Frank was completely falling apart. And she had some crises in her personal life that I would imagine would have been pretty distracting. But she still gives such a great performance. And I love the scene where she was improvising with feeding the baby elephant, and then it knocks her over into the mud. And, she just keeps going. Like, she just keeps playing the scene. And that, I just love that. It's so fresh. It's so funny. It's so real.
When I asked museum director Linnell this question about her favorite Ava movie, her answer really surprised me because she mentioned One Touch of Venus as one of her favorites. And that's a film that's been mostly forgotten today. In it, Ava plays a statue of Venus in a department store who magically comes to life when a window dresser kisses her. And, as you might imagine, chaos ensues. Linnell said she likes it because it's lighthearted, and Ava just gets to be charming and bubbly and funny. By this point in 1948, she was already starting to get pigeonholed as the femme fatale, and so One Touch of Venus gave Ava the chance to show how versatile a performer she could be.
One final question about Ava's filmography before we move into the museum and the festival, but what movie would you recommend people start with, besides our favorites, if they're completely new to Ava and they've never seen one of her movies before?
Well, I think you and I've had this conversation before. We're fortunate that Ava had the chance to make almost every type of film. She worked in almost every genre. So it kind of depends on what your tastes are. If you like comedies, there's some comedies there. If you like musicals, there's some musicals there. There's romance, thrillers, all of that. So she has a lot of ways that, fans of different types of genres can kind of enter her filmography, get a taste of it, see if they like her, and then, her performance and move on. Typically, we talk about her breakout film being The Killers. That's a film noir at its finest, one of the best examples of the genre. So that's always kind of a great entry point for her. If you're not into that style of film, where you've not really kind of taken a deep dive and learned how fantastic it is, you know, another fun film is One Touch of Venus. That's a great film where she's just, you know, just a fun character. She's like, it's a lighthearted, it's romantic. So that's another fun one to kind of get your feet wet. But again, I would say, you know, if there's a particular style of film you like if you like disaster flicks, you know, she's got some, the Earthquake is a great one and her biggest box office hit. So, you know, there's a lot of entry points, but probably The Killers is the one I most kind of recommend, because she's really at the beginning of her career, but she's been in Hollywood long enough to learn to get, you know, get her footing somewhat. She'd worked in a lot of uncredited roles up to that point, but you can see her, you can see the screen presence that's to come really taking shape in that movie. So that's what I always like to recommend as a starting point.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I'm also just a film noir nut. It's one of my favorite genres. So that's why I'm always trying to get people to watch those movies. And my friends are like, what do you mean it's in black and white? I'm like, you guys, that's not the point. Like, come on. But yeah, you know, The Killers is certainly an easier sell than a lot of other film noirs I love. Like The Big Sleep, I love that movie, but it also, the plot makes no sense. Mm-hmm. At all, and you watch it for the atmosphere and for the performances, but then you're like, did we ever figure out who killed that guy?
Like, does it matter?
So yeah, the Killers really holds up, and it has that same quality of like the first shot of Ava in the movie, her back is turned and she's like in the background, but you still, your eye goes straight to her.
You do.
She has this really compelling magnetism.
Uh-huh. Linnell listed The Night of the Iguana as a favorite because many of the people who knew Ava described this performance as the closest one to Ava's own personality. So even though she didn't recommend this to Ava Newby specifically, I think it's a great place to start.
So yeah, I want to talk now about the museum itself. And so is there an artifact or exhibit in the museum now that is of special interest to you or that you think might surprise people?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm sort of an amateur collector. I don't have a lot, but as a designer and artist, I've always been fascinated by kind of any form of ephemera. So I love finding classic magazines or advertisements or things like that in antique stores. And they're generally reasonably priced, so you don't feel like you're breaking the bank to collect those kinds of things. So I have a personal collection of that. And I love those kinds of pieces because they show they're pedestrian to some degree. You know, they're what the average person could have subscribed to this movie magazine in 1945 and gotten this picture of Ava, you know, wearing a swimsuit, eating an ice cream cone or something, which we may look at a little differently today, but nonetheless, you know, and I love those kinds of pieces because they speak to me. So we have quite a large collection of ephemera. We don't always have kind of a means to display it. You know, it's not necessarily the showiest artifact, but in working on this project for Pandora, which this exhibit's going to be up until, I think it's going to be up maybe about another month through September. I think we're going to be changing it out for the festival in October. We're going to reuse that exhibit case to talk about some of the her relationships with her husbands, and we've got some new artifacts that we're going to be displaying. We're excited about, but that exhibit in particular, the Pandora and the Flying Dutchman exhibit, was really an exploration of how the film was marketed and some of the pieces, you know, global pieces that were, you know, ways it was marketed in other countries. And it's a lot of smaller ephemera and that kind of thing. So I really love that and was excited to have that exhibit take shape and be able to display some of those things on social media because they're more conducive to that environment than, you know, in a big exhibit case at the museum. But that was really fun. The other thing that I love in the collection, and we're working on some projects around it, which may debut in conjunction with our festival, if not probably into next year as we continue to celebrate Ava's 100th birthday, but our collection of parts of her library. While we don't have all of it, we have quite the majority of it. And she just met some fascinating people and had books that are, you know, with inscriptions from, you know, James Baldwin, Robert Graves, a lot of other people that she interacted with, met, and had personal connections with or enjoyed their work. So to be able to like look at that library, I mean, a library is a very personal thing. You know, that's something you keep in your house. These are books that you live with and have spend time with. And to be able to look at her library and see the kind of things she was reading, the kind of topics she was interested in, the things she explored, I find that really fascinating. And I think that's something that really gives you an insight into who she was as a person, what interests her, what got her juices flowing, you know, and all of that. So so I love her collection of books, and I look forward to the ways that we're working on trying to share those with her fans and interpret those in the museum.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm always fascinated. You can tell so much about what people love based on what's on their bookshelf.
Absolutely. Good or bad, yeah. You can tell. Yeah.
When I asked Linnell this question about museum artifacts, she told me about a little flamenco dress that was made for a young girl. Ava had had it specially made for one of her nieces. This dress matched one of Ava's own flamenco dresses. And Linnell loves this artifact because she says it shows Ava's lasting connection to her family and her home.
So tell us more about the festival. What's happening? What special events are going on?
So for those who don't know, we are excited that we're on the cusp of Ava's centennial birthday. She was born Christmas Eve, 1922. So December 24th, 2022 will be her 100th birthday. And the museum has been working for a couple years now in planning and preparing some initiatives that will be not only a festival, but a year's worth of celebrating. We want to celebrate her entire centennial year. Kind of the kickoff for it will be this festival that we're hosting in October. We've had some fun things happen kind of leading up to that. You know, you can't do it all on that day. So we have debuted a new mural in the at the museum. It's on the side of the museum, and a rose garden that is a tribute to Ava. Ava's favorite flower was a yellow rose. So we have a yellow rose garden at the base of this beautiful mural that depicts key moments or key things throughout her life. It represents three decades of her five-decade film career. So three different films are featured in that, or moments in her career. And then her, you know, discovery photo, which we've talked about in the museum a lot. And then her kind of more quiet life where she was amongst family and friends in her last years in London with her favorite corgi, one of her favorite corgis. But, you know, we were really excited to debut that mural. We're going to have a dedication ceremony at the museum during the festival. The festival is going to take place October 7th through the 9th. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're going to have events throughout the whole weekend. On Friday night, we're doing a tribute concert to Ava that's going to feature several artists, as well as an MC who's going to be sharing some, you know, fun stories about Ava's life. And the tribute, the music is going to include songs from her films, some songs that she sang and some where she was unfortunately overdubbed, like Showboat that we mentioned earlier. But it's going to have several films of hers featured. And then there's going to be some music that Ava loved. Ava was an avid, in addition to loving to read, she loved music. She loved jazz and swing music and big band music and all of that. And so we're going to feature some of those, some music from that period that also includes music from Artie Shaw and Frank Sinatra. So we're really excited about that. That's going to happen on Friday, the 7th. The next day, we're going to have our dedication ceremony to, you know, officially break a bottle of champagne for the mural and garden. And we're opening the museum actually on Friday with some new exhibits on display. We're working on one right now, as I mentioned earlier, about Ava and her relationships with her husbands. We've got some new artifacts that are going to be on display that we're excited about that have been acquired over the last 2 years and have not been displayed in the museum yet. We also are going to have a new exhibit. It's still in the development stages, but we're working with, there's lots of collectors out there that we have great relationships with. And several of those collectors have agreed to loan artifacts to the museum. as well as some family members that we have a close relationship with. They're going to loan artifacts to the museum on a temporary basis. So there'll be a special exhibit for just a short period of time, but it will have artifacts from her films and her personal life that have never been displayed before. So we're very excited about that. And then, as I mentioned, we're working on some things with her letters and books. During the pandemic, we pivoted from being, you know, primarily an in-person museum to also doing some virtual programming. So we're going to be sharing some of that. And we've got some initiatives in that space as well that will coincide with the festival. And then we're going to be doing 3 screenings at the festival, which are going to be great. We're going to show The Killers and Pandora and the Flying Dutchman on Saturday, a matinee in the evening screening. And then on Sunday, we're going to screen The Barefoot Contessa. And these, The Killers and the Pandora screenings are going to be the newest releases of those, the 4Ks. So they're going to look fantastic on the big screen. On Saturday as well, we're going to have some heritage tours, which are tours where we have a guide that takes groups around on a bus, and they take them to kind of show them Ava's hometown and some of the spots that were important to her, the house where she was born in, another location where she spent her childhood years and went to elementary school, and important to both her life and the life of her family. So that's going to be going on throughout Saturday. And then we've got other things kind of percolating that we hope can come together. We just can't quite announce them yet. So we have a fun weekend packed with all kinds of neat activities, both Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we hope everybody can come out. And then after that, we're working on some things for December and then some things into the next year that will coincide. So you'll have to have another conversation about those that continue to celebrate her life throughout the full centennial year.
It sounds like such a cool event. I wish I could go.
Well, if you can't make it, like I said, you know, we're working on we really want to take the museum to the people. So we're working on some components that will be in the virtual space. And then we're the exhibits, the loan exhibit. I'm not exactly sure how long that will be up of loaned artifacts, but some of the other things in the museum will be up. So people can come, even if they can't make it festival weekend, which we hope you can. We're going to continue celebrating, and we want you to come see us and be a part of the conversation long past the dates of the festival.
Well, thank you, Laura, so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate you and Linnell both, not only for being a part of my show, but for the work that you do at the museum, preserving Ava's legacy. So thanks again.
Well, we appreciate you, and we've enjoyed your podcast and look forward to more people discovering it and learning more about this fantastic relationship between Ava and Frank, this enduring love that we are excited to talk about in our upcoming exhibit. So it's great. Your podcast had great timing.
Oh, cool. So
we appreciate you asking us to participate in this, and we're happy to come back whenever you'd like to chat again.
Thanks for listening to Lovers Forever. You can find all the information you need about the Ava Gardner Museum and the Ava Gardner Festival linked in the show notes, as well as social profiles for Linnell and Laura. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you might be listening. And thanks again so much to Linnell and Laura for doing this episode with me. We will return with a second season very soon.